We would like to send out a special thanks to HelloFresh.com for supporting The Trail Went Cold. And we would like to thank you, the listeners, by giving you the chance to receive $30 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code COLD30. That's COLD30. Enjoy the show. July 1st, 1974. Beirut, Lebanon. Bashir Khushakji is kidnapped by an unidentified group of men who spend the next 5 days interrogating and torturing him for reasons he doesn't understand. 9 years later, after Bashir has moved to Washington, D.C. and become a successful restaurateur, he finds himself being tormented by a non-stop series of threatening phone calls from a mysterious figure known only as L'Enfant. The calls continue relentlessly for an entire decade and test Bashir's sanity. But even after they come to an end, the identity of the caller and the reasons for Bashir's abduction in Beirut remain unknown. After that, the trail went cold.
Who's this? What?
This time, you'll be killed.
Who is this?
Curiously, many of the calls appear to have been made by a 10-year-old youngster who was dubbed L'Enfant, French for the child. The calls continued, becoming more sinister, more menacing.
Marrakesh?
Hello everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host, Robin Warder, and I can safely say that today's case is unlike any other we've ever featured on this podcast. There is no unsolved murder or disappearance in this episode, as instead we'll be covering one of the most bizarre, unexplained harassment campaigns you'll ever come across. It involves a man named Bashir Khushakji, who for an entire decade was tormented by thousands of bizarre phone calls. The culprit? An anonymous figure or group of figures known as L'Enfant, which is French for the child. As you can probably surmise from those sound clips you just heard, this case was originally featured on Unsolved Mysteries in February of 1993 and remains one of their more unusual stories. Season 5 of the show was recently uploaded to Amazon Prime, but this segment was conspicuously absent, so once again, The Trail Went Cold has decided to take the reins. I've been wanting to do an episode about this one for a while because it pretty much defies rational explanation. As you probably know, one of the drawbacks of the invention of the internet is that it makes it very easy for people to stage an anonymous harassment campaign against someone without even leaving their own homes. That's why I'm always perturbed by stories like this, which involve an individual, or multiple individuals, harassing and tormenting a victim non-stop for several straight years. In the pre-internet age, something like this required a ton of time and effort, and is particularly terrifying when you don't even know the perpetrator's motivation. What could Bashir Khushakji have done to compel someone to phone him several times per day, every day, from different locations, for a decade? In addition, there's also an odd story within a story here involving an unexplained abduction, which may or may not be connected to L'Enfant. As I wrote in my Crack.com article, The 6 Creepiest Unexplained Phone Calls, it was another strange event in the rabbit hole of weirdness that is Khushakji's life. But before we get started, just a brief reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast which alternates between our regular full-length episodes and shorter minisodes. We deliver either a new full-length episode or a new minisode every Wednesday. We're currently available for download on several platforms, including iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play Music. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it and please leave us a rating or a review, because that will help us garner more exposure. The Trail Went Cold also has its own PayPal account and a donate button on our website. If there's anyone out there who wants to make a donation, we would greatly appreciate it, and we'll be sure to give you a shout out on a future episode. So with all that out of the way, it is now time to venture down the rabbit hole of weirdness known as L'Enfant. Our story begins in Beirut, Lebanon in 1974. Our central figure is Bashir Khushakji, an Armenian Catholic who was originally born in Syria before he was raised in Lebanon. During the early 70s, Bashir got married to an American singer named Gail. While Bashir got a job as an entertainment writer, Gail continued her singing career and often performed at the Phoenicia Hotel, which was a well-known gathering place for Middle Eastern diplomats and arms dealers. As a result, Bashir would often be invited to parties alongside his wife and mingle with these people. So we're going to start things off with a bizarre prologue involving an incident which may have some relation to our main story. On the evening of June 30th, Gail agreed to perform at a private party being held by a Saudi princess. Bashir, who was 29 years old at the time, made arrangements to pick her up at 11:30 p.m. and arrived at the location in his Mercedes. He waited around until about 1 a.m., but Gail never showed, so Bashir figured he might have the wrong address and decided to leave. However, right after he turned the corner, his Mercedes was suddenly cut off by a van containing four armed men with machine guns who proceeded to abduct him. They took Bashir to a Palestinian refugee camp, placed him in a dark basement containing nothing more than a light bulb and a blanket, and would proceed to hold him captive. He was soon brought in front of his captors for questioning and accused of being a member of the CIA. Bashir denied this was true, so over the course of the next 5 days, he would be tortured at regular 2-hour intervals. Throughout his ordeal, Bashir would maintain that this must be a case of mistaken identity, but his captors were relentless. After constantly being deprived of sleep for 5 straight days, Bashir started to have terrible hallucinations, and things got so bad that he decided to attempt suicide by breaking a plastic bowl of food he'd been given and using one of the jagged pieces of plastic to slash his wrists. He then used his teeth to tear away at the wound, causing severe bleeding. And believe it or not, when his captors found him, they decided to rush him to a hospital. No, seriously. The doctors were able to save Bashir's life, and while he was recovering, he managed to convince an orderly to contact his mother. She contacted the American embassy, who in turn worked with the Lebanese government to negotiate Bashir's release. But he never did find out the reason why he was kidnapped and tortured. The U.S. State Department theorized that Bashir's abductors were members of the Palestine Liberation Organization, who believed he was an undercover CIA agent. The reason they may have jumped to that conclusion is because Bashir had spent an hour and a half parked inside a Mercedes with Belgian plates in a neighborhood where he looked like he did not belong. His abductors may have noticed him and become suspicious, which led to his kidnapping. Whatever the truth, the ordeal seemed to take a serious toll on Bashir, and once word of the incident got out, he felt like he was living under a cloud of constant suspicion, and that people believed he was a secret agent working for the CIA or the Israeli secret police. So only 2 months after his capture, Bashir decided to move to Los Angeles, and he eventually became an American citizen. However, his relationship with Gail was never the same, and the couple would divorce. Whenever Bashir asked Gail about her whereabouts on the night he was kidnapped, he claimed she always provided vague answers. Bashir wound up becoming the manager of the Dar Maghrib restaurant, a successful establishment on Hollywood's Sunset Strip, which specialized in Moroccan food. This place apparently became very popular with celebrities, as the Unsolved Mystery segment actually showed pictures of Bashir posing alongside such stars as Clint Eastwood and Elton John. Bashir and his sister would capitalize on this success by opening their own Moroccan-themed establishment in Philadelphia called the Marrakesh Restaurant, and they soon decided to open another one in Washington, D.C. However, this particular restaurant would signal the start of a non-stop campaign of torment for Bashir. Starting in 1983, Bashir started receiving a ton of strange phone calls at the Marrakesh restaurant in Washington. In fact, they began before the restaurant even opened. A phone was installed in the Marrakesh while it was under construction, and Bashir started receiving quite a few calls on it when there would be no one on the line. When Bashir installed an answering machine on the phone, it started receiving messages containing weird sounds and laughter. After the restaurant opened, the calls continued. They'd start off with the caller remaining silent and breathing on the line before abruptly hanging up. Then whoever answered the phone would hear stuff like people laughing and screaming, along with random sounds such as machine gun fire. Things began to escalate, and the calls to Bashir became more disturbing and would range from obscene to life-threatening. Even when Bashir himself didn't answer the phone, the caller would start harassing and threatening the employees who did answer, which, needless to say, caused a pretty high turnover rate at the restaurant. At one point, Bashir's pregnant spouse took one of the calls and had her life threatened. The caller started mentioning the names of Bashir's friends and acquaintances to suggest he had intimate knowledge of his personal life. Some days, the calls would start immediately the moment Bashir walked into his restaurant, which seemed to indicate someone was watching him. It got to the point where the threatening calls started occurring 15 to 20 times per day, every day. Perhaps the weirdest aspect of this whole thing is that the voice of a young child, both male and female, could often be heard on the line during the calls. No one had any idea who was responsible for all this, but because of the preponderance of children's voices during these calls, the caller eventually earned the nickname L'Enfant. On one occasion, Bashir traveled to the Marrakesh restaurant in Philadelphia, which was being managed by his sister, and L'Enfant started phoning him there. The harassment began to move beyond phone calls. One day, Bashir discovered that some Stars of David had been carved into his Mercedes. In May of 1986, Bashir was driving his Jeep when it started overheating and smoke emerged from beneath the hood. Bashir pulled over, opened the hood, and discovered that someone had tampered with the spark plug wires, which came dangerously close to igniting the gas lines. This compelled Bashir to go to the FBI, and he requested they launch an investigation into the threats on his life. So the FBI placed a tap on the phone at the Marrakesh restaurant, and over one 18-month period, they would record over 3,000 threatening calls from L'Enfant. However, there didn't seem to be any distinct pattern to them. They all originated from payphones in the DC metro area, which included Washington, Maryland, and Virginia, but they can never be officially traced to a specific person. The most disturbing implication is that the calls often occurred with such frequency that multiple people had to be involved. Calls would be made from different payphones at different locations within less than a minute of each other, so it would have been impossible for only one person to have made them. As a specific example, L'Enfant made a total of 16 calls on July 14, 1987. It all started when two separate calls came in within seconds of each other at 9:53 a.m., and then two more calls came in at 9:54, and they did not all originate from the same location. After that, the next calls came in at 11:23 and 11:24 a.m., and they kept returning at various intervals throughout the day. Two separate calls came in at 4:12 p.m., followed by another at 4:13, and another at 4:16. The last of the 16 calls would come in at 9:25 p.m. This was pretty much your typical day at the Marrakesh restaurant during this time period, and you could never predict when the calls would come in, and at what frequency. Needless to say, the whole ordeal took an immense toll on Bashir's mental health. He became extremely paranoid and angry most of the time, which led to him breaking up with his spouse. Things got so bad that Bashir decided to voluntarily check himself into the psychiatric ward of Sibley Memorial Hospital in 1987. Not only was this an opportunity for him to seek therapy, but his primary motivation for this was so he could isolate himself from the harassment. Prior to his stay in Sibley, Bashir estimated that he had received a total of over 7,000 calls from L'Enfant over a four-year period. He pretty much considered the hospital to be his only safe haven. Well, guess what? This didn't bring an end to L'Enfant's harassment campaign, and it only got weirder. Even though Bashir was no longer working at the Marrakesh restaurant, The phone calls kept coming in. In Bashir's absence, the restaurant would be managed by a man named Raj Tooley, and sure enough, he started receiving calls from L'Enfant, who proceeded to harass him and threaten his life. Much like with Bashir, the caller would share details about Raj's schedule and personal life to suggest he was being watched. Only 3 weeks after Raj started managing the restaurant, things got really serious for him. One day, Raj's young son Richard was walking home from school when he was suddenly jumped by two unidentified men who proceeded to beat him up very badly. Shortly thereafter, Raj received a call from L'Enfant, who confirmed that they were responsible for the attack on his son. The very next day, Richard returned home and discovered that the words "Richard will die" had been spray-painted on the front door. Anyway, at the time the Unsolved Mystery segment aired in 1993, Bashir was still checked in to Sibley Memorial Hospital and had been living there on and off for the past 6 years. He would often get discharged, but after living in the outside world again for a couple weeks, he'd start getting very paranoid and edgy and decide to return to the hospital. At one point, Bashir received a workers' compensation judgment from his insurer totaling $436,000. His claim was that since his job required him to constantly answer the phone and be bombarded by non-stop harassment, it was the direct cause of his illness. But believe it or not, Bashir would still receive calls from L'Enfant at the hospital, though it sounds like the staff would take them, and Bashir never had to answer the phone himself. They came with much less frequency, but he'd still receive an average of 7 calls per week. And incidentally, one of the most unintentionally funny moments in the history of Unsolved Mysteries occurs during a reenactment when the actor portraying Bashir asks a nurse for his phone messages, and she casually says, "The first 2 calls were from L'Enfant." Yeah, considering that's the reason Bashir is being treated to begin with, that's probably not the best approach. After tapping thousands of phone calls from L'Enfant, and not turning up any leads about who was responsible, the FBI decided to close the investigation because there was really nothing more they could do. I can't pinpoint the exact moment when the phone calls and the harassment finally came to an end, but it sounds like they finally subsided sometime during the 90s, possibly because the case got exposure on national television. Bashir eventually did check out of the hospital for good and went back to running the Marrakesh restaurant. But there's another bizarre postscript to this story I have to mention. Several years ago, back when Unsolved Mysteries clips were still allowed to be posted on YouTube, I watched this segment on there. At the end, a text update appeared on screen which stated that Bashir had just made the whole thing up. My heart stopped for a brief second until I read the words, "Don't believe everything you see on Unsolved Mysteries," and I realized this text update was not actually part of the show. The update was done pretty convincingly. It was put together with Unsolved Mysteries' graphics and music, but I somehow doubt that Unsolved Mysteries would write, "Don't believe everything you see on Unsolved Mysteries." So obviously, this update was put together by whoever posted the clip, and they seemed to have their own agenda. Did this mean L'Enfant had finally discovered YouTube? Well, actually, that might explain a lot about their comment section. But whatever the case, it appears that the true identity of L'Enfant and their motive for terrorizing Bashir Khushakji remains unknown. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. Before we continue, we would like to send out another special thanks to HelloFresh.com for supporting our podcast. As someone who balances this podcast with a regular full-time job, I don't want to spend too much of my spare time on tasks like shopping and cooking, so I'm very grateful for the convenience of HelloFresh. HelloFresh is the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking more fun, so you can focus on the whole experience, not just the final plate. Each week, HelloFresh creates new delicious recipes with step-by-step instructions. Each recipe is designed to take around 30 minutes to make in your kitchen. The recipes are set up so that anyone can make a delicious and nutritious home-cooked meal in 30 minutes, whether you cook for yourself or are not so comfortable making home-cooked meals. HelloFresh sources the freshest ingredients, measured to the exact quantities needed, so there's no food waste. Everything is delivered to your doorstep in a recyclable, insulated box. Well, HelloFresh is also now offering light spring meals and has introduced breakfast options. It's a value of less than $10 per meal. I am pleased to say that I have teamed with HelloFresh, and they are now offering everyone in our audience $30 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code COLD30. That's COLD30. For weeks now, I have been enjoying shipments of meals from HelloFresh. Just recently, in only 30 minutes, I was able to prepare a helping of double-smoked bacon fusilli, complete with zucchini and covered in toasted garlic. It was a delicious, convenient meal to eat on a night where I was busy working on this very podcast episode. And I think it's also the type of meal you would enjoy eating while listening to podcast episodes such as this. So once again, be sure to visit HelloFresh.com and use the code COLD30 to get $30 off your first week of deliveries. That's COLD30. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of the show. So like I said in my intro, this is pretty much unlike any case I've ever featured on The Trail Went Cold. The closest comparison is probably my episode on the Cindy James case, where it was undetermined whether the victim was stalked and harassed for several years before she was murdered, or if she just fabricated the whole ordeal herself before committing suicide. But in this particular case, we know the harassment actually happened. The FBI got involved for 18 months and documented over 3,000 harassing phone calls to the Marrakesh restaurant. In fact, the cover photo for this very episode is taken from an actual FBI record of the calls. Unless Bashir somehow convinced a bunch of accomplices to phone him thousands of times for the purpose of orchestrating an elaborate hoax, there's concrete evidence that multiple individuals conspired to mercilessly harass him. I seriously doubt that Bashir could have fabricated the whole thing himself, so the obvious question is, what did this guy do to cause someone to hate him so much? Well, here's the thing. Bashir Khushalqi has become quite a controversial figure. Years after the ordeal with L'Enfant came to an end, Bashir found himself in the news for very unflattering reasons. Back in 1992, while Bashir was still checked into Sibley Memorial Hospital, he started forking over a lot of money to publish ads for the Marrakesh restaurant in the opinion section of both the Washington Post and the Washington Times. He considered the ads to be therapeutic, and they often featured a large USA headline with copy like, "Only the United States can ensure that the New World Order will be truly responsive to the rights and needs of the oppressed." Well, fast forward to July of 2002, when the Washington Post published another article about Bashir Khushalqi, which had nothing to do with L'Enfant. Bashir had paid for an ad in the Post's Outlook section which contained such lines like, "Have Zionists turned Jewish beliefs into a political party in the service of hatred and greed?" The ad said it was sponsored by Marrakesh Enterprises and listed the Washington restaurant's address and phone number, even though by this point, Bashir's family were running the restaurant's and he was no longer involved in their operations. Not only that, but Bashir was now running a website containing extremist socio-political rants filled with anti-Semitism, along with some pretty awful views about women and homosexuals. He claimed that the Jews and the Israeli government were responsible for his kidnapping ordeal in 1974 and his subsequent mental health issues. Well, needless to say, Bashir's ad in the Post caused quite a bit of backlash among Jewish readers, who urged the public to boycott the Marrakesh restaurant. The whole thing was such a PR nightmare that Bashir's family completely distanced themselves from him. Even though Bashir had been paying the Post to run his ads for years, the paper refused to run another ad containing a link to Bashir's extremist website. Anyway, this website was up for years and said some pretty awful things, but it has since been taken down. However, this has led to some interesting debate about whether or not Bashir truly was an innocent victim of mistaken identity when he was kidnapped in Beirut back in 1974, or if he might have done something to seriously piss someone off. Well, I will not defend any of Bashir's views, but I will give him the benefit of the doubt. It's possible he's been an anti-Semitic, misogynist, and homophobic person all along, but it's also possible that his kidnapping ordeal and his extended harassment campaign from L'Enfant just caused him to have a complete mental breakdown. The end result is that Bashir turned into a paranoid, hateful man, and spreading his extremist views is his way of dealing with the situation. When he first came to America, the guy was a pretty successful restaurateur for years, and I don't know of any serious issues with him until L'Enfant started harassing him in 1983. In order to try and make sense of this whole thing, let's go back and look at Bashir's kidnapping in 1974. Admittedly, when I first watched the Unsolved Mystery segment, the whole description of the abduction incident was so bizarre that I began to question if it actually happened, but there's obviously a record of it. While Bashir was in the hospital, his mother contacted the American embassy, they involved the Lebanese government, and there is official State Department documentation about the whole ordeal. If the whole thing was a hoax, it seems pretty extreme to me that Bashir would slash his own wrists and nearly wind up bleeding to death. But I suppose we really only have Bashir's word about the actual events which took place during the 5 days he was in captivity. I do think something did happen to Bashir, but there are parts of his story which don't hold up. I can certainly believe that he could have been abducted and tortured because he was a victim of mistaken identity, but it seems pretty odd to me that his captors would decide to take him to a hospital after he attempted suicide. You'd think that if something like that happened, they just wanted to cover their tracks and dispose of his body. How did these events even unfold anyway? Did Bashir's kidnappers just drop him off at the hospital's entrance and speed away? And how exactly did the US and the Lebanese government obtain his release? Were these kidnappers just hanging around the hospital and waiting to abduct Bashir again once he made a full recovery? Bashir paints himself as a totally innocent victim who was abducted by the Palestine Liberation Organization because he happened to be hanging around the wrong neighborhood at 1 in the morning and was mistaken for a CIA agent, and that explanation is not completely implausible. However, if Bashir was actually kidnapped because of something he was into which he does not want to talk about, I would not be the least bit surprised. The real wild card in this part of the story is Bashir's wife Gail, who was nowhere to be found when Bashir arrived to pick her up that night, and apparently would not provide a straightforward explanation about her whereabouts. The couple divorced shortly thereafter, and when Bashir was interviewed for a Los Angeles Times article in 1992, he refused to say her name, and claimed he had no idea where she was by that point. I guess it's easy to infer that Gail might have been involved in her husband's kidnapping, but given that she was an American citizen, and I don't know if she had any affiliation with the Palestine Liberation Organization or any other extreme groups, I'm not sure what her motive would have been. Since Bashir's pregnant spouse was threatened during L'Enfant's harassment campaign during the 1980s, you could also infer that Gail was involved in that too, but again, we don't have enough information about her to jump to any conclusions. But remember, Gail often sang at parties for Middle Eastern diplomats and arms dealers, and through his association with her, Bashir got to meet some of them. So he easily could have crossed paths with the wrong person and seen or heard something he wasn't supposed to, maybe without even realizing it, which is why someone felt compelled to kidnap Bashir and torture him for information. Now, if L'Enfant was actually connected to Bashir's kidnapping in 1974, you might be wondering why they would wait 9 years before they started going after him again. Well, a theory about this was presented on Unsolved Mysteries. It's possible that some of the people involved in Bashir's abduction went on to become international diplomats and eventually settled in Washington. When they discovered that the same man they kidnapped years earlier was now running a successful restaurant in Washington, which was popular among Middle Eastern clientele, they became worried he could potentially recognize their faces and identify them. So they decided to orchestrate an harassment campaign against Bashir in order to drive him away. In other words, they were trying to gaslight him. In case you're not familiar with that term, gaslighting is a form of psychological abuse where someone will deliberately manipulate a victim into questioning their own sanity. So maybe this was the diplomat's grand plan to get rid of Bashir. Well, I don't know. This theory seems like a bit of a stretch. What are the chances that Bashir would cross paths with these diplomats in Washington and instantly recognize them as his kidnappers over a decade after the fact? And even if he did, these are international diplomats who have lots of protections from United States laws. They're not going to be arrested for kidnapping on U.S. soil on the word of one guy who claims they abducted him a decade earlier. And if they're really that worried about Bashir, then why not just have him killed or make him disappear? Trying to get rid of Bashir by driving him nuts through an extensive harassment campaign which involves multiple conspirators seems like the most needlessly complicated way to handle the problem, especially since it went on for an entire decade. So I have to think that L'Enfant's motivation was much more deep-seated than a bunch of diplomats trying to hold on to their jobs. But it is true, however, that the harassment against Bashir did not actually start until he arrived in Washington, D.C., and that he'd already been a successful restaurateur in Los Angeles and Philadelphia for years. So I have to think that Washington does have some sort of significance in this story. It's crazy that the calls apparently started immediately after a phone line was installed in the Marrakesh restaurant while it was still under construction and not even open yet. How many people would have even known that phone line's number? I also find it extremely interesting that all the calls seem to go exclusively to the restaurant. As far as I can tell, I'm not sure Bashir actually received calls from L'Enfant at home during this time period, because if the calls were coming into his home, Bashir could just decide not to answer the phone. But when you're running a business where customers are going to be calling you several times per day, you don't really have that luxury. And once the restaurant's number has been made public, changing it is a major pain in the ass, and will cause confusion among the customers, as you couldn't just go online and check the phone number back in the 1980s. I know that Bashir received some threatening calls when he traveled to the Marrakesh restaurant in Philadelphia, which was run by his sister, but as far as I know, L'Enfant never called that restaurant when Bashir wasn't there. As far as the other harassment goes, we know that Stars of David were scratched into Bashir's Mercedes and that someone sabotaged his Jeep, but that particular incident didn't occur until 3 years after the harassment started, so there really doesn't seem to be much rhyme or reason to L'Enfant's methods, though I would be curious to know if the incident with the Stars of David might have played a role in developing Bashir's anti-Semitic views, or if he always had them, and this was someone's response. So now let's talk about the possible significance of the name L'Enfant. Well, L'Enfant is not just simply French for the child. In 1791, a French-born engineer named Pierre Charles L'Enfant presented George Washington with a project called the L'Enfant Plan, which led to the president commissioning L'Enfant to develop Washington, D.C. Today, there's an entire complex of buildings in Washington called L'Enfant Plaza, and I'd be really curious to know if any of the calls came from payphones near that particular location. Again, because the caller often sounded like a child, that might be the only explanation for the L'Enfant name, but since all this harassment took place in D.C., I'd be curious to know if Pierre Charles L'Enfant's name has any significance to this story. But in case you're wondering, it's highly doubtful that a child was actually making L'Enfant's calls. The LA Times article I referenced earlier concludes with a great quote from one of the restaurant's employees, who states, "This L'Enfant would have grown up by now, but it's the same voice." So it's likely that whoever was making these calls just decided to play recordings of a child's voice, as they were often interspersed with recordings of other sounds, such as machine gun fire. What's funny is that the voice of the child they use during the Unsolved Mysteries reenactments of the calls sounds quite a bit like Gary Coleman. So maybe the caller was using recordings from different Strokes episodes or something. I don't know if there's a reason the callers decided to use recordings of a child's voice, but there's one odd thing I cannot overlook. The only person who was physically attacked during this entire ordeal was a child. Remember, just 3 weeks after Raj Tooley started managing the Marrakesh restaurant in Bashir's absence, a pair of men assaulted his son Richard, and then a threatening message to Richard was written on his front door. I might have been able to write off these incidents as unconnected events if Raj had not received a phone call that L'Enfant was responsible. And that is just so unnerving to me. I really don't know too much about Raj Tooley or his background, but it seems like he didn't do anything except take over the day-to-day operations of a restaurant. Given how quickly this happened after Bashir checked into the hospital, I can't help but wonder if the attack on Richard was intended as a message to Bashir. If you try to hide from us, we will take it out on other people in your life. Maybe they thought the best way to send this message was to attack an innocent child, which is a pretty twisted way of doing things. Part of me wonders if this whole thing was a vendetta against the Marrakesh restaurant, since they kept receiving the threatening phone calls for years after Bashir stopped working there. But what would the motive for that be? Was L'Enfant embittered because the Marrakesh drove someone else out of business or took over a location which they felt belonged to someone else? Was this campaign an elaborate scheme to drive them out of business? Well, if so, it obviously didn't work, since I believe the Marrakesh is still open for business in Washington today. But then again, L'Enfant started phoning Bashir while he was checked into the hospital, and I'm not sure they would have done that if their vendetta was against the restaurant. I'm not sure what to make of the incident where Bashir's Jeep was sabotaged in 1986, as this seems to be the only time his life was actually put in any serious danger. It's been theorized that L'Enfant was a gaslighting experiment designed to drive Bashir insane, but the incident with the Jeep could have killed him if the gas lines had ignited, and it does not seem like killing Bashir was ever part of the master plan. Part of me wonders if maybe there was someone else who had a grudge with Bashir, and they decided to sabotage his Jeep because they just figured the incident would automatically be blamed on L'Enfant. The same logic could be applied to the attack on Raj Tooley's son. If someone else had a vendetta against Raj, they knew they could easily pass the blame onto L'Enfant, and everybody would believe it. I really don't know. The whole thing just defies logical explanation. I saw the documented record of 16 calls from L'Enfant on July 14, 1987, and it's incredible to think that this was practically a daily occurrence for years. And the fact that multiple phone calls took place from multiple locations within a minute of each other, that's concrete proof that multiple people were involved in this, and they had the patience and wherewithal to keep it up for a decade without getting caught. I know that all of these calls took place from payphones, but it's amazing to me that after listening in on over 3,000 calls, the FBI was unable to catch someone in the act at least once. I guess I can't completely rule out the idea that Bashir enlisted some accomplices to make all these calls for the purposes of orchestrating a hoax, but that seems like an awful lot of work for no real payoff. If the whole thing had lasted for a much shorter amount of time, I might be able to write this off as being an elaborate prank by a bunch of trolls, but I doubt they would have bothered to keep it going for 10 straight years. I think there is definitely some truth to the theory that certain people wanted to gaslight Bashir, and considering that his personal and professional life was seriously derailed for years while he checked himself into a hospital, they did succeed in a way. They didn't completely break him, but I do have to wonder if L'Enfant has taken some twisted pleasure in the fact that Bashir did eventually do serious long-term damage to his reputation by publicly spouting off his hateful views, and all of that may have been a direct result of what they did to him. I couldn't even begin to theorize how this entire ordeal started, but I have to think that Bashir did know more than he was telling, and might have had some sort of idea who L'Enfant was. Whether they were connected to Bashir's kidnapping in Beirut, or something else in his life, Bashir's erratic extremist behavior within the past 2 decades makes me suspect he might have some secrets which could shed some light on this entire story. So this is one episode where I'm not going to end with my usual spiel about contacting the proper authorities. Whatever crimes were committed in this story, the statutes of limitations for them would be long expired by now, so even if you know the identity of L'Enfant, revealing it now is not going to change anything. But this is such an utterly bizarre mystery that I definitely felt it was worth devoting an entire podcast to it, since there is so much fascinating material to analyze. Out of all the victims and all the stories I've covered, Bashir Khushokji is definitely one of the most polarizing. He has spent the past several years publicly spouting some pretty vile stuff, so you might not think of him as the most sympathetic figure. If Bashir has always held these views, or if he did some unsavory things which he has never revealed, then he might have paved the way for his entire ordeal, though that doesn't necessarily mean he deserved it. However, if Bashir was a truly innocent man who did nothing wrong prior to his kidnapping, then he does deserve some sympathy, especially if the experience took a toll on his mental health and helped change his personality for the worst. I'm not sure if we'll ever learn the true identity of L'Enfant, but if there was a list of unsolved mysteries in which I wanted to learn the full story about what actually happened, this would be ranked right near the top. The truth might not change anything in the grand scheme of things, but I'd still love to know. And I would love to hear everyone else's thoughts as well. If you have your own theories about L'Enfant, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email at robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Need to give another shout out to my supporters out there, especially those from the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. I need to provide my thanks to McGill Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the music you hear on every episode. And since we've entered a new month, I need to send out another huge thanks to our listeners who have signed up for recurring monthly donations, and they are Alice, Amber, Brian, Casey, Don, Elliot, John, Carrie, Kathleen, Keisha, Kristen, Laura, and Sean. So thank you very much, folks. Your support means the world to us. Remember, you can sign up for recurring monthly donations at our website, or just make a one-time only donation via PayPal. Either way, we're extremely grateful. So have yourself a good week, and join me next Wednesday for a brand new minisode of The Trail Went Cold. ¶¶